supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. There is a poem by the 13th century poet Rumi that begins this way. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. The poem continues. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. With these words, Rumi invites us to go beyond our everyday raw minds, our sense of right and wrong, good and bad, to go beyond all that and break with what's familiar. Poetry opens our minds, it opens the heart, it often helps us feel less alone when we're in turmoil. It helps us organize what feels like chaos. My guest, Ellen Bass, knows quite a bit about this. She's been writing poetry for nearly 30 years. Her work captures the human experience. She writes about love, loss, tragedy, and joy. Her nonfiction works include The Courage to Heal, a guide for women survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Her recent book of poetry, among many books of poetry, is called The Human Line. Ellen joins us to talk about the healing power of poetry, what it does to the listener, and what it does to the writer. And I must add that I have known Ellen Bass for 62 of my 65 years on this planet. Ellen, welcome.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Dan.
So, my dear friend, let me give out the numbers if anybody wants to join our intimate little tete-a-tete here. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. We would really love to hear from you. A favorite poem, if you've had a poem that has helped you heal a wound or help you understand something about your own experience or life, or maybe you've done some writing that has been healing for you. 888-477-9499. So our relationship begins in Pleasantville, New Jersey, circa 1950. And here we are 60 years later. You're a poet. I'm a psychologist, and yet we both see the human experience in very similar ways, somewhat unique, and yet very similar. So I think about that a lot, and I wonder if there was something about those grilled cheese sandwiches your mother made us.
My mother always tried to get Dan to eat more because he was a skinny little thing, and she'd always be saying, "Just another bite, just another bite."
Well, she was very successful. So your vision of the world is really kind of wide open, and it's vivid. Did you always find yourself kind of making these keen observations about the world and your fellow humans and how they navigate through the world?
I think I was always trying to, in some way, make some shape to my experience. And although I didn't have the the skills of the craft to do it. Even as a child, I was trying to make poems that somehow reconciled what I was experiencing and put it into a larger human perspective. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to articulate sure. that then, but I was trying to do that. I wrote a poem when I was in junior high, and a clique of girls was giving me a very hard time, and you know, making fun. Junior high years can be right. very hard, and the poem said, you know, they know not what they do, my Lord. Forgive them. And you know, it sounds, you know, so kind of, you know, poignantly funny, you know, as a child, but in some way I was looking for that language, you know, and it was very stilted language. You know, it was the only poetry that I had come into contact with, but I was somehow trying to shape something back then.
And that says something about your mind too. Kind of a compassionate mind. See, my poetry would have been, they know not what they do, O Lord, take them to wherever you are. So this poetry, in, you know, in Greek mythology, poems have been viewed as the carrier of messages
yes.
from the unconscious mind to the conscious mind. And my language, or today's language, it's really the language of the heart.
Right.
So what does that say about poets?
I think that poets are trying to speak in a way that in some way encompasses the whole of the experience, not that a poem doesn't report an experience, which would be the language of the mind. It tries in some way to deliver the experience. The idea of the poem is not for me to tell you my experience, but for me to make it possible for you to have that experience. So if I write something and at the end you think about it, wow, Ellen really feels strongly about this, or she really feels happy, or she really feels sad, that poem didn't do its work. But if at the end of the poem you feel the experience inside your own body, then the poem is a successful poem. So the poem begins with the experience of the poet, but it ends in the experience of the reader.
Do you write with the reader in mind?
Yes and no. The first impulse, I'm the first reader of my own poem. So first I'm writing it to myself to try and make meaning out of my own experience. And sometimes it comes out of the whole range of experience. It comes out of everything from suffering to great joy. But I'm trying to tell it to myself at the first level. And then as I go back, and I try and not to think about the reader at all on the first writing, because that would be make me too self-conscious. But then when I go back and work on it, I'm thinking about what will help the reader have this experience. What do I need to say so that the reader will be able to enter the poem?
It's interesting, because now that I listen to you, Ellen, I have that experience on this show. Every time we do the show, that my effort is to have my audience share an experience, not just learn.
Exactly.
But to share an experience.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. We've got Ron on the line. Hey, Ron.
Oh, hi, Dan. This is hi, Ellen. I'm glad to have the chance to talk to you. This is I'd like to share a piece of a poem that I wrote as a prayer, and it's called "At 2 o'clock today, something fell in love." And here's the excerpt I'd like to share. Now, as I meditated at the foot of Jacob's ladder, my chest rose 2 inches. Maybe it was you, or was that your thank you hug for not being on time with those blessings? Did the breath of life suffer a pulmonary embolism? No, Ron, I imagine you answering. It was my way of asking forgiveness. See, I'm God, but my alarm clock isn't. I wrote that after a very, very rough patch, and that came from a real-life experience where I was in a meditation weekend, and I actually had that feeling of my chest rising 2 inches, and it felt like someone was falling in love with me at that moment.
So that writing it was healing for you?
The writing was healing. The writing was uplifting. And every time since then that I felt really rotten, I've gone back to that piece of writing. Fortunately for me, that's easy because it did get published. So not only do I have it on my computer, I have it out in the world as well. And it was something that that really, I don't want to say turned my life around, but I would like to say that that even reading it now brings me a sense of contentment and a sense of joy that I didn't have 5 minutes ago.
Do you know this? I don't want to deconstruct this too much because it might ruin it, but do you know why that continues to have that effect? What happens to you when you read it?
Well, for me, it was a visceral experience, hence the title. It was during a meditation weekend, and literally at 2 o'clock, I was meditating on the subject of Jacob's Ladder, and I felt my chest rise 2 inches. One of the excerpt lines was, "Something or someone just fell in love with me."
Yeah.
And that feeling of being embraced in such a powerful way, really gave me, I'm alone. I am a divorcee, and when I'm not with them, I miss my children terribly, and I miss the feeling of being in love with someone in a really tangible fashion. This feeling of intimacy with something that I call God, but you could call anything.
Right.
It was a blessing that continues to bless.
Well, you know what, Ron? It's a wonderful story, and it's a terrific poem. I really appreciate your call. I appreciate your sharing it. Thanks so much. We're talking about poetry and the healing power of poetry with Ellen Bash. She's an award-winning author of poetry and nonfiction. And you teach poetry, and much of what you argue, and many poets argue, is that the writing of your experience, the writing of it, is healing in itself. Are you talking about journaling or something beyond journaling?
When I talk about poetry, I'm talking about something beyond journaling, but it's true that journaling itself is healing, and just being able to write your experience in any way at all, what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you've gone through, is healing in itself. Then to take it into another field, to take it into actually crafting a poem, is another element of healing, because there you're taking this chaotic experience of life, which is not shaped. Life just comes to us willy-nilly in all sorts of ways. And you're making a shape for it. You're creating a meaning. You're making a shape. You're crafting it. And you become a maker rather than someone who is either a victim or being acted on. And you have a kind of control that that has a shape to it. You know, you have a page, you have somewhere for this experience to live. And you say in some way, maybe not directly, but in some way what the meaning of this experience is as you craft a poem. And there's something incredibly comforting to us as humans to make order out of chaos. We're pattern makers.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the empowerment
yes.
of making order.
Yes.
Through poetry. And, you know, we've done shows and there's lots of research now about what changes our worldview is often how we make meaning out of our lives, how we describe the narrative of our lives. And if we change the narrative of our lives, we actually begin to change the experience.
Exactly. You've talked about this, that our lives are a fiction that we create. And this is like a sister concept to that concept. And we also take the experience and let me share it in this way. There's this wonderful 14th century Persian poet, Lala, who has this small poem about poetry. She says, "I didn't trust it for a moment, but I drank it anyway, the wine of my own poetry. It gave me the daring to take hold of the darkness and tear it down and cut it into little pieces."
Hmm. Hmm. So what is it with these 13th, 14th century
they were onto
Persian
something.
Poets?
Yes.
Man, they knew some secrets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, not secrets. They knew some truths.
They knew some truths. And I love that, you know, to take hold of the darkness and tear it down and cut it into little pieces. And I think in a poem we do, we take one element, we take one moment perhaps, and that's what we handle rather than the whole chaos of experience.
Well, what that poem does, what most do, is they take an emotion and they make it visual.
Yes.
And research shows that we learn best, all of us, learn best through metaphor.
Right.
And that's...
That's poetry.
That's what poetry is. But mm-hmm. on the surface, it simply looks like you're telling a story in just a very elegant and beautiful way.
And you're telling it in images. That's what, like you're saying, you're speaking in images rather than in reportage.
Well, we have to take a break, but before we do, I've got to treat our audience. Speaking of telling stories in an elegant and beautiful way, I've got to treat them to some of your poetry. So please read Happiness, and listen to the beauty in this.
Happiness. I had a student once who was so depressed she wanted to die. She was a young single mother, lonely, poor, watching other girls go to parties and bars while she was home cutting the crusts off peanut butter sandwiches, reading The Berenstain Bears and The Bad Dream. Then she collapsed with heart disease and spent the next few years waiting for a transplant. The strange thing is, now she was happy. Every day, almost every breath, was semi-ecstatic. She was a modern-day Chicana Rumi, hanging out with the beloved, grateful just to touch his hem. I find I'm telling myself all the time now, look how you lift one foot and then the other, all the nerves and synapses firing together. Look how you reach for a carton of blueberries and eat each dusky globe one by one. Look at the spotted dog tied to the newsstand, drops of saliva sliding off his tongue, and the cracked Bic lighter in the gutter, shining a watery turquoise blue. Even when your heart is a used tea bag, you can lie down in a warm bed, even though you cry half the night, with the window open a little to let in the stars.
Ellen Bass reading Happiness. She's an award-winning author of poetry, nonfiction. Her works include I Never Told Anyone, writings by women survivors of childhood sexual abuse. She's written several books of poetry, including her most recent, The Human Line, which is just wonderful. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'll be back in just 1 minute. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY.
Independence Blue Cross supports WHYY. IBC is proud to launch the new Independence Blue Cross Foundation, whose mission is to transform healthcare in the communities they serve. The Foundation's innovation grants support projects and research that significantly advance healthcare delivery in our region. Through community partnerships, the Foundation will support new and creative solutions to reduce healthcare spending, improve quality, and expand access to care. To learn more, visit ibxfoundation.org.
This fall, Arizona and Michigan will be important battlegrounds in the presidential race, and the Republican candidates have already been campaigning hard in those states. I'm Melissa Block. Tomorrow, voters will decide the next two contests in the race for the Republican nomination, and we'll bring you results, reaction, and analysis. Special coverage of the Arizona and Michigan primaries from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking with Ellen Bass, an award-winning poet and author of many books of poetry and a dear friend of mine for the last 60 lot of years. I want to come back to that poem on... that you read right before the break on happiness. And how what happened to this woman when she had her heart attack. And Paul Simon once wrote, "The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky, it's as though when the light of life flickers, we begin living anew." You know, I just did a conference yesterday for parents of children with disabilities, and I've done lots of workshops for people who've had physical and emotional trauma, and it's the same thing. When that light flickers, we wake up. We wake up, as one man said to me once, "I feel like my whole life's been a dress rehearsal for this moment, moment, and in a way it's tragic, you know. Is that part of why you write this poetry?
Exactly.
Inviting us to wake up now, see that turquoise color in the big pen.
Exactly, and inviting myself, admonishing myself first. That's what, I mean, you're saying it exactly. That's exactly why I write poetry, is so that I don't miss this lifetime. And to try to keep saying to myself, look, don't miss it.
Yeah, I gave a lecture a couple of years ago, a morning keynote speech to a group of social workers. And I started off by saying, I missed breakfast this morning. And I learned you don't say that to social workers. It's like they all went crazy and they were grabbing food. it was not pretty. But I said, no. I ate breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
But I missed it.
Right.
I didn't taste it.
Right.
I didn't. And how many meals have
exactly. And that's, I think that for me is the I mean, I think I write poetry for many reasons, but that's the primal one.
Keep you awake.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been hugging you. We've got lots of people who want to talk with you and share their stories. So let's go back to the phones. We've got Michael there on the line.
Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Michael.
Can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, you're very faint, but I can hear you. My question was, I've written what I wouldn't call poetry, but more prose, and here's some of it's rather strange, and sharing it is a risk of rejection, but it's also a risk of acceptance and love. And should all the base service units for mental health and all the mental health organizations, and all libraries and synagogues, churches, and mosques have their own poetry discussion. I'm not on the internet. Thank you.
Well, Michael? No, I think we lost him. But the beginning of the question is, when is it safe? I mean, you write poetry, we write poetry, about what's most vulnerable in us. When is it safe to share? Do we have to share? What's the impact of it? I'm sure this has come up in your workshops.
Those are really good questions. And just thinking about it in a practical sense, it's good not to share it until you're ready to be misunderstood. Because
you got to explain.
Because very often we do share our work, and somebody's rushing off to their job, or they're in a different state of mind, or maybe the poem isn't quite as crafted as it eventually will need to be. It's still maybe in a rough state, and it will be misunderstood, or someone will read it completely from their own point of view and take from it something that you never intended. So it's a very gratifying experience to share your poetry, but if it feels too vulnerable, you should be cautious. And maybe there are one or two people in the world that are really safe people who will take the time to listen to your work and listen thoughtfully, and that's really wonderful. But it's okay to be a little bit protective.
Michael raised an interesting question, and I think it's maybe the human experience. He said he didn't want to risk being rejected, but he also was afraid of being accepted for who he was. And that's kind of a truth few people can acknowledge, but I think that's human. I mean, I don't know what we're more afraid of, being known and accepted for our vulnerabilities or being rejected.
I think that's very perceptive of Michael. Essentially, I think what happens eventually is, as you're writing and sharing poetry, is that you realize that you're using the details of your life, perhaps. You may be using the facts of your life, but you're really writing about the human experience. So the poem does not say, accept or love me for my particular life story, or don't reject me for my particular life story. It's really our commonality, and when a poem really reaches a reader, it's because it reaches that reader's experience, not because I'm sharing. So it seems that personal poetry is very personal, and in a certain way it is. But in another way, it just uses, I only use the details of my life in order to talk about the thing that we all have in common, all of our suffering, all of our joys. There's a wonderful line that the poet Stephen Dobbins says. He says, I believe that a poem is a window that hangs between two or more human beings who otherwise live in darkened rooms.
Mm.
And so the poem is a window. It's not, if I could kind of use his analogy, it's not a mirror of me. It's not like me putting up a big poster, like I'm a movie star in a film. It's just a window between us.
It reminds me of a great writer whose name I forget. It might have been Marion Woodman, said the divine child is always an orphan. And my vision is that the world is an orphanage for us.
Yes.
That we are in it together.
And yes.
That's that window.
Exactly.
Between two darkened rooms. We're talking with award-winning poet Ellen Bass about the healing power of poetry today. Let's go to the phones, Ellen. We've got Lisa on the line. Hi, Lisa. Do we have you? We're having some phone problems. We'll try to get back to you, Lisa. Our number is 888-477-9499. Let's try again with Carol. Carol?
Hi, Dan. Good morning. Hi, Ms. Bass.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well.
Good, thanks.
I wanted to compliment you first off for your extraordinary work. I was very surprised to hear that the topic was about poetry. The one that I would like to share with you that I developed was called This Woman's Work, inspired by the movie with Kevin Bacon and Elizabeth Montgomery, if I may. I know my purpose now, which is too strong for normality. God has given me a special gift that is as wide as the sea. I burn with passion to sit and write, to let my mind release my fight. Thank you.
Carol, thank you so much.
Yes,
thank
love
you.
The show.
Just beautiful. Thanks so much. Elena, the great pain of suffering or trauma is what we talked about before, is that we inevitably feel alone in the world. And poems, even very sad or painful ones, can help us feel less alone. I very often read from Mary Oliver's poem, Wild Geese, and I saw it quoted in an article you sent us earlier. But it reads, "Tell me about despair, yours, and I'll tell you mine." I mean, the reassurance that we all have despair together. Nobody needs to fix it.
That's
we
right.
We just need to be with it. It's human.
Exactly. And I think that's what poetry does. Carol's poem does that exactly too. You know, we share. I mean, we're not the first person in the world to have suffered. People have suffered before us. They're going to suffer after us. They're suffering now. And the one thing we can be really sure of is we're never alone in suffering. There's plenty of other people suffering. And when you read a poem about suffering, it's a wonderful paradox. Instead of it making you feel worse, it makes you feel connected and less isolated. And also, there's always a hopefulness, because the truly terrible thing is when the suffering person stops speaking. It's the silence. As long as the person is speaking, even if they're speaking of their despair, there is that reaching out and connecting.
You were speaking of despair. You wrote a great deal around your mother's illness and her death, and some of the poetry was pretty raw and painful. Could you read one? One of the most poignant to me was called Last Night, from your book, The Human Life.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Last night, she's fallen asleep for the first time in days, sunk like a ship to the ocean floor. When she stirs, I grab the morphine, quickly slide the dropper into her slack mouth. But I'm clumsy, startle her, amber liquid spilling over her cracked lip. Up, she croaks, frantic, wild to rise. I drag her to sitting, swing her legs to hang over the side. She leans against me. Hours go by, and the sky is no nearer to light. No more, she whispers, and please, and enough. Each word pushed out on its own. Mom, I try again, lie down. I'll lie down with Ellen, she says, a wary edge to her voice. I climb into the narrow bed, my body a breath away from hers.
I'm the host of the show, and I'm supposed to say something right now, but I can't find anything to say. What was it like for you reading that just now?
It's bittersweet. It takes me right back to being there with her. And that is a gift to go back. One of the things that was so, I felt was so fortunate for me during my mother's illness and death was that I could write poems because it was a way to be with the experience and handle it. And I didn't want to miss a second of it. I felt like I was just so lucky. I live in California. My mother lived in Philadelphia, and I wasn't ever sure that I would get to be with her as she was dying. And it turned out that I could be, and I was so grateful for that. So being able to write these poems after she died was so precious, and it's the way that I mourned. And I didn't want to forget anything. I wanted... And while I was writing them, I felt like I was with her. So even the sweet part of it is remembering being with her.
I have to tell you, listening to it just now, I felt myself fighting here. I didn't want to know. You were making me look at something I didn't want to look at. It's almost like the poem had its hands on my heart and were prying it open when I wanted to close it to your experience. It was powerful and kind of ticked me off a little bit.
Well, it's that, for me, the poem is in a way about a kind of helplessness.
Yeah.
And my mother, when she would say, please, and help me, of course, you know, what you want most in the world is to help the person that you love. And, you know, I was inadequate to help her as much as I wanted to. And I tried to capture that in the poem.
Yes, for my money, it's the most difficult part of the human experience is about tolerating your helplessness when a loved one is suffering.
Yeah.
We've got to take a break. When we come back, I want you to read some more of your poetry, and we're going to take lots more phone calls because lots of people want to share their experience with you. We're talking with Ellen Bass. She's an award-winning poet, and her most recent book of poetry is called The Human Line. Our number is 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and you're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM.
Law can be an instrument of change. That's why the Widener Law Program is a practice-based legal education from a faculty of respected legal scholars and practitioners. Classroom learning is reinforced with hands-on experience through clinics, externships, trial simulations, and much more. And the Delaware campus, located in the heart of America's corporate capital and in close proximity to many of the nation's leading healthcare providers, is a place to focus on corporate and health law. Learn more at law.widener.edu. Widener Law supports WHYY.
Don't act like you don't care about the Oscars, but why do we care? Is it the films, the fashion, or waiting for the most cringeworthy speech? We will hear about it all. Who won, who lost, and who wore the most head-turning outfit. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are here with Ellen Bass, an award-winning poet and a very, very, very dear friend of mine. And we're talking about the... I just want to make sure you're paying attention, Ellen, and, by the fourth very. It's all right. My feelings aren't hurt.
I looked away for a moment.
So we're talking about the healing power of poetry, and I promised we'd get to the callers, Ellen. And,
good.
And let's do it. Let's start with Helen. Hi, Helen.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you for that last discussion. I am a caretaker for my mom. My mom has dementia, and this whole last discussion was very meaningful for me. I wanted to ask about your writing process. You started off this hour discussing how you do a version that's just for you, but then you try to turn it into something that's more accessible for the reader. How do you know when it's done? How do you, like... what kind of makes you decide that something is ready, and how do you structure your writing life? Do you try to write every day, or how do you handle it?
Well, Helen, I'm going to have Ellen answer all those questions, but don't go away because I want you to answer them too.
Okay.
The question of how do you know when it's done is a good one. I think I just keep working on it until I can't get any further, and then either I feel like it's successful, or it goes into my pile of beloved rejects, which I appreciate very much. All of those poems that didn't work. I'm a person who has to do a lot of writing to get the poems that I get. I only publish a book every 5 to 7 years. Maybe there's 40 or 45 poems in that book. So if you do the math, you see that not too many poems make it through. And but I'm writing all the time. I don't write every single day, but I'm writing pretty much a lot all the time.
Are you writing in your mind all the time?
Yeah. I'm always writing in my mind. And I don't exactly, although I say I write the first draft for me, I don't mean that I write it without bringing all of what I've learned over these 40 years of writing to the page. So, I'm trying my hardest in the first draft, but I'm trying my hardest for myself to articulate the experience as precisely as I can. But I try not to think about the reader, because then you get self-conscious and you start thinking, is this going to be a good poem? Is this going to be a successful poem? And then you're not with the experience any longer. It would be like if you were kissing somebody and you thought, am I doing a good job of kissing them? You know, you wouldn't really be in the kiss.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Boy, do I remember those experiences from high school. Ray-vay. So, Helen, how would you answer all your questions?
Well, it's interesting because I participate in a writing group with a bunch of seniors. I'm 51, but I participate in a writing group with seniors, and some of them write poetry. And I would say for all of us, we tend just to... whatever the first draft is, that's what we bring in, we read, and then we just move on to something else. And I'm trying to encourage everybody, myself included, to do the go back and rewrite and evaluate, and because I think things can definitely become better if you look at it again. Do you, Ellen, go back to your reject pile ever? And
yeah, sometimes I do, and sometimes there's a little snippet of something. More often I find that I've attempted a poem in different forms many, many times, and then eventually I attempt it and it actually works as a poem. And I don't realize that I've been doing that until I look back and I see, oh, you were trying to write this poem for the last couple of years, and here's this version, and you tried to write it through this set of imagery, or you tried to write it through this experience, and then finally it comes through, because it's something that for some reason was important to me to grapple with, or or handle or try and understand. That's the thing about a poem, is that the poem talks to you. That's when a poem is really, to me, when a poem is really working, is when the poem starts to tell me what it has to say. Mm. And the most interesting part about a poem, in a way, is when it starts to take that turn into territory that I didn't anticipate. And the kind of real essence of the poem is whatever that discovery is.
So it's what we talked about in the beginning. That's when the unconscious,
that's right,
starts to,
that's
become
right,
more awake. Helen, that's, I hope, right, I hope you got your questions answered. I appreciate the call. They were pretty provocative questions. So consistent with that, about style and structure, I'm interested in what grabs you. Because if you're making observations, all of your waking, probably your sleeping hours, I'm interested in what grabs you and why. And I'm wondering specifically around what has become, for the moment, my favorite Ellen Bass poem. And that's the Thing Is, which I have hanging on the wall in my office. Will you read it to us?
Yes. This poem is called The Thing Is. The thing is to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, and everything you've held dear crumbles like burnt paper in your hands, your throat filled with the silt of it. When grief sits with you, its tropical heat thickening the air, heavy as water, more fit for gills than lungs. When grief weights you like your own flesh, only more of it, an obesity of grief. You think, how can a body withstand this? Then you hold life like a face between your palms, a plain face, no charming smile, no violet eyes, and you say, yes, I will take you. I will love you again.
Where did that come from, Ellen?
Well, that came from, as you could guess, it came from a time when I was in great despair, really suffering personally. I had... I was just in more pain than I ever imagined I'd ever been, be in, more emotional pain than I imagined I'd ever be in. And the poem seemed to me, when I wrote it, terrifically personal, that I didn't expect this poem to speak to other people. I kind of thought of it as a sort of a throwaway, you know, just a something I had to write for myself. And it was truly surprising to me that this poem spoke to other people. And it, and once I got over that surprise, I realized that I was very foolish to be surprised, because it is, and I know this, but I didn't know it in connection to my own poetry. I know that when we speak at our most personally, that we are paradoxically the most universal. And speaking out of our most personal pain is what connects with other people's most personal pain.
Do you think that, in a way, writing poetry is sharing secrets?
Sharing secrets. It depends what you mean by secret. I think that it's sharing secrets that aren't secrets.
Yes.
Well, that it's a, you know, that we go around thinking that it's a secret that we suffer so much. We go around thinking that it's a secret that we have human feelings, the whole range of human feelings. But of course, it's not a secret, because everyone else is carrying them in exactly the same way.
Much of your career has been about breaking the silence.
Yes.
And I think poets do that like no one else does.
Yes, and we realize You know, sometimes people say that, you know, is it difficult for you to share these personal things about your life? But they don't, by the time they're crafted into a poem, they don't feel personal to me.
They
feel like I'm talking about what all of us share, but don't always reveal.
Well, speaking of despair, I've got terrible news for you. We're just about out of time. But I do want you to close the show by reading a delightful, sweet poem called Gate 22. Is that from the Human Line?
That's from the Human Line. And yes, after all this suffering, here we can just have some joy.
See, if read your favorite parts, because we've got about 40 seconds.
Gate C-22. At gate C-22 in the Portland airport, a man in a broadband leather hat kissed a woman arriving from Orange County. They kissed and kissed and kissed, long after the other passengers clicked the handles of their carry-ons and wheeled briskly toward short-term parking. The couple stood there, arms wrapped around each other like he'd just staggered off the boat at Ellis Island, like she'd been released at last from ICU, snapped out of a coma, survived bone cancer, made it down from Annapurna in only the clothes she was wearing. And it goes on to talk about how neither of them was young, but the best part was his face, and how we watched them. I'm getting the signal that it's time to stop.
My timing was way off. I encourage everybody, read Gate C-22 from the Human Line. Ellen, I love you dearly. Thank you so much.
So wonderful to be here.
We've been talking with Ellen Bass about poetry. Next week on Voices in the Family, we'll talk about creativity and madness, touching on the life and works of Vincent van Gogh. Well, you can reach us at whyy.org/voices, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Mark Cerno is our intern. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Me? I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends. Enjoy.